Okay.
I'm not the organizer.
Okay, so first of all, I actually want to begin tonight with a couple of announcements, public service announcements. a few people mentioned to me after last week's class that it was a little abstract, and the whole point is that I'm not speaking here just, you know, that we should be able to sit here together, even though that's also a big thing, the Baal Shem Tov Torah, that when Jews sit together, even when they don't learn Torah, it's a big thing, how much more so when we do learn Torah, but I obviously have every intention and desire that everyone should understand what I'm saying. So a couple of public service announcements. Number one, from now on, at the end of the lecture, I'm going to take questions. I'm not going to run away, and I'll open the floor for questions. Anyone wants to ask questions and stuff like that, we'll wait to at the end, Mitzvah Shem. Anyone wants to ask questions, it'll be my pleasure to answer questions. That's number one. Number two, if anyone during the week... Oh, 1 second. Number two is that everyone should know that these classes are online. They're on the Eish Kodesh website, so you could listen to them. If anyone misses a week, you could listen to them. During the week, if anyone wants to ask questions, like if they're reviewing and they want to ask questions, so my email is shmuelbrun@gmail.com, not very hard. And I think it's you send me an email, and then the following week I could discuss it. You know, if it's a question, I'll discuss it publicly also. Number four, I'm Mitzvah Shem. Mrs. Pfeffer volunteered, and she said she's going to help me type up, we're going to type up summaries of the classes. So hopefully by next week we're going to have summaries and outlines of the previous classes, and each week we're going to hopefully be able to put together, you know, different summaries and stuff so that we could all be able to follow along. Most weeks are not going to be as abstract as last week's, hopefully. Bli neder. Okay, let's learn. So we'll start, we're actually holding in the second paragraph on page 1, page 3. The image that a halachic man presents is singular, even strange. He is of a type that is unfamiliar to students of religion. And we mentioned last week the reason being, because until Rav Soloveitchik, the lens through which people began studying, the microscope through which people began studying the experience of religion, again, this book is about the experience of religion, the phenomenology of religion, what we experience. Phenomenology means what we experience. The experience of religion. Before Rav Soloveitchik, many people discussed theology, religious ideas, ideas about God, ideas about religion, objective concepts about religion, all different types of religion. That there have been for hundreds of years. Philosophy, theology, etc. What began with William James, what began in the 20th century, after the Kantian turn to the subject, right, after Kant said to study what a person's experience is, so then the latter-day psychologists began studying the experience of the religious person, what is going on in the religious person. And Rav Soloveitchik was the first one to actually begin studying it from a Jewish perspective. So what he's saying over here is that halachic man is singular, even strange. He's unfamiliar to students of religion because students of religion have been focusing on the religious, homo religiosus, religious person. Religious person, which again, we're going to speak about more, I'm not getting into today, but religious person is a certain type of religious person. Halachic man is a different type of religious person. Essentially what he's trying to say, the phenomenology, the experience of a chassid, again, with Jewish standards, but again, it would be with other religions also, as we'll speak about. A Hasidic phenomenology, the way a chassid would look at the world, the way a chassid would experience his relationship to God, as opposed to halachic man, which is the misnagdic phenomenology. How a misnagid, how those that were students of the Vilna Gaon, Schus Yigam Aleinu, how they would look at the world, how they focus, how their experience of serving God. So that's what he's going to explain over here. And halachic man is completely unfamiliar because Rav Soloveitchik's thesis is going to be that religious man, the Hasidic look of serving God, is familiar and has parallels in other religions. Other mystical religions, other mystical movements, other religions that we do find in other religions. The religious man, the Hasidic experience. That Rav Soloveitchik is going to say... I told you last week I don't necessarily agree, but we'll get to it, Mitzvah Shem. Rav Soloveitchik is going to say that we have in other religions, that mystical experience of religion. Halachic man, the misnagdic phenomenology, that's completely new. Now, let's see inside, because now we're going to spend quite a while on this paragraph. But if in the light of modern philosophy, religious man in general has come to be regarded as an antithetical being. If regular religious men are considered antithetical, meaning a person that has opposing ideas within him, fraught with contradictions. Antithetical means that he's fraught with contradictions. If all religious people are known to be fraught with contradictions, and what he's going to say at the end of the sentence is, how much more so halachic man? If all religious people in the world, that everybody knows what their experience of all religious people, the definition, we could almost say, of a religious person is a person that's fraught with contradiction, a person that struggles with contradiction, that's antithetical, how much more so halachic man? His contradiction is going to be that much more deeper. Now, listen carefully. The contradiction, the tribulations, the fact that halachic man struggles even more is the next paragraph. But here we're in the middle of the Kal V'Chomer, right? In this paragraph, he's first saying how all religious people struggle. That's what he's saying now. Okay, so I'm focusing because this sentence is a very deep sentence and we're going to have to focus on it. So I'm just explaining the context. First, he's saying, if we know that all religious people struggle, and now we're going to learn how all religious people have to struggle, the next paragraph he's going to explain halachic man, how much more so. But let's see. If in the light of modern philosophy in general, religious men, homo religiosus in general, has come to be regarded as an antithetical being, fraught with contradictions, who wrestles with his consciousness and struggles with the tribulations of the dualism of affirmation and negation, approbation and denigration. How much more so halachic man? Now these are four big whopper words. In Burger King they'd call them the big whopper, right? These are big whopper Burger King words over here. We have to say, what does this mean over here? And I got to tell you, I didn't know in the beginning. I looked in the Hebrew. Rav Soloveitchik wrote this book in Hebrew. Didn't help much. So I thought about it for a long time, and I could be I'm wrong, but this is the way that I understand what he's saying over here. He's saying that all religious people struggle. The definition of what it means to be a religious person, again, he's not yet talking about a Jew, he's talking about a religious person, struggles with what? With the tribulations of the dualism of affirmation vis-a-vis negation, affirmation as opposed to negation, and the dualism, the struggle of approbation vis-a-vis denigration. That's the struggle of religious people. What does that mean? So what I think, what Rav Soloveitchik is saying over here, the dualism that religious people, that a person that tries to connect to God is always faced with, is a dualism of, number one, how to view the world, and number two, how to view oneself. Affirmation vis-a-vis negation. Let me ask you a simple question. What's he saying, affirmation or negation? We all struggle with this dualism of affirmation and negation. Let me ask you a simple question. I'm going to say, the schus of Google, so I know that 2 or 3 days ago was Rorschach's Yahrzeit. Right? You know how they have that cute little thing sometimes? So Rorschach had a Yahrzeit 2 or 3 days ago. So they had in Google that little thing. So Rorschach test. I'm going to say to you, not an image, I'm going to say a word, and you tell me if you're going to have a positive vibe or a negative vibe. Okay, you ready? Olam Hazeh, this world, good or bad? Good for the Jews or bad for the Jews? Is Olam Hazeh, when you hear Olam Hazeh, what does it mean to you? Does it right away say, is it good or is it bad? Is Olam Hazeh something good or is Olam Hazeh something bad? It's both, but it has to be a struggle. In fact, the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, in chapter 50, he brings from Pirkei Avos. And Pirkei Avos, at the end of the fourth chapter, Pirkei Avos, so you remember over there, it says, the Tanna says over there, Bal korchach ata chai, bal korchach ata meis. Yeah, it says in Pirkei Avos. Against your will, you're alive. Against your will, you were born. Against your will, you live. And against your will, you'll die. Which we all know the song from, what was that, Journeys, right? Neshamala, come with me, little Neshamala Journeys, yeah? Right, so we all know, what is it? The simple explanation about Korcha Tachai, about Korcha Tameis, is that when we were born, so that, you know, God had to like yank us, you know, by the lapel to bring us into this world. We didn't want to come. We don't want to come down to this world. Bakor chatachai. And then after 120, they have to yank us out. We don't want to leave. Right? We don't want to leave. Rabbi Weinberger, he says that the Rupshitz used to say two things have in common. Eretz Yisrael and Olam Haba, two things we both want to end up there, but not yet. Two places we want to go, but soon. Not yet. Right? So Bakor chatachai and Bakor chatameis. It was against your will that you were born, against your will that you're going to die. But the Alter Rebbe says in Tanya, we're not just talking about age 0 and age 120. We're talking about the dualism of the dualism of affirmation and negation. The dualism that we have to live with every single day. If you like Olam Hazeh, if you're too connected to this world, if you feel too comfortable here, Balkor Chatameis, you got to kill yourself. You got to remove yourself. Balkor Chatameis, force yourself to die. Force yourself to not feel so connected to Olam Hazeh. Force yourself to not be so into this world. Force yourself to want spirituality and to negate physicality. If a person comes to such a spiritual state that you think that you're ready to give up on Olam Hazeh, you think that this world is nothing, is worthless, is not mean, is you don't want to be involved in it at all, Bakar Chatachai, force yourself to live. You have to live with the dualism. Pirkei Avos is saying it. Bakar Chatachai, Bakar Chatameis. Every moment you have to be, you're forced this way, you're forced that way. And you understand, listen carefully, that being forced, that being propelled two opposite directions all the time, forced to live, forced to die, is both in behaviorally, and existentially. Listen carefully. This dualism, this constantly being propelled and having to struggle with affirmation and negation, refers both to the way that we're supposed to behave, and also, number two, existentially, the way that we're supposed to view the world. Let's start with the way you're supposed to behave. So let me ask you a question. We all know there's something called a nazir, a Nazirite, right? A nazir. One who makes a vow, and through that vow prohibits himself from having wine, cutting his hair, etc. When a nazir becomes pure, at the end of the time, when a nazir is finished, when he gets impure by accident, anyone know what type of carbon, what type of sacrifice does a nazir have to bring? A chatas. Why? A chatas means a sin offering. Why? What does Gemara in Taina say? Because what? He abstained. Nizer atzmi min hayayin. He did a sin. What was his terrible sin, this nazir? He did a vow, and he forbade himself from drinking wine. It's a terrible thing. He did a sin, and he made it. He shouldn't be able to drink wine. And you have to partake of wine. How could you not partake of wine? And that's considered a sin. What did he sachko? What did he do? He's not going to slurp a little amount of shevitz. Big deal. He's not talking about that he's fasting. That the Gemara in Tainus also says is a sin, but he was talking about just wine, and yet he has to bring a sin offering. Because why? Because bakor chatachai. Because there has to be affirmation, behaviorally. Let's say the other way around. Kedoshim tiyu. It's a parsha in Vayikra, a whole parsha called Kedoshim tiyu. We're told to be holy. God commands us to be holy. No? What does Rashi, well, not Rashi, the other Mefarshim, not Rashi. Rashi says one particular thing. But what do the other Mefarshim explain according to the Chinuch, according to the Ramban? What is Kedoshim tiyu? What are we told to be holy? To separate yourself from Olam Hazeh. To separate yourself from things of this world. Hello? Can we get some clarity over here? Or do we not see this? Which is it? Kedoshim tiyu, a whole mitzvah essay, deraisa. According to the Chinuch, it's a mitzvah essay deraisa. It's one of the 613. To separate oneself from things of this world. So which is it? If I don't separate myself from things of this world, that's bad. The Torah says you have to separate yourself. If you do, then you're a nazir, you don't drink wine, it's bad. So which is it? Which should it be? The answer is there's no answer. The answer is that it's a struggle. You're fraught with the tribulation. You're racked all the time. To be a religious person means constantly not... There's no clarity over here. It's not, even today when they have Svarim on every topic. They have this, a whole sefer of how to put a mezuzah, in a bedroom. And another one, how to put a mezuzah in a kitchen, right? You have Svarim on every topic, Baruch Hashem. Glasses in halacha. Right, a 5-volume set on how to button your shirt on Shabbos. Everything is very clear. Today, people want to know exactly how to do things. They want instructions, Baruch Hashem. People want to know exactly, well, that's coming from whatever. Sometimes it's healthy, sometimes it's not. But B'chol Ofen, people want to know, want to be told everything. Right? So now, which sefer tells you exactly how much to be behaviorally be involved in Olam Hazeh? Which sefer will tell you exactly when you should eat the steak or when you shouldn't? I'll never forget when I first started learning Chassidus, I had a Chavrusa in Neir Yisrael in Baltimore. He's actually to a Magid Shir in YU, Yonis and Shippel, anyone with John and Shippel. So we were learning together Shla. We had a Chavrusa and Shla back then, we were learning Shara Isir. And we came with the Shla writes in Kedushas Achila. He writes of that a person that eats. Now eating is the code for any being involved in anything physical, right? But a person that eats, L'shem Shemaim, should have in mind, the Shlo says, L'shem yichud kutcher brichu v'shchinte. That you're uniting the infinite light of God with His Shechina. Right? And the Shlo's not talking to tzaddikim, the Shlo's talking to everyone. And I forget when I first saw that, I mean, obviously the Shlo is one of the inspirations of the Baal Shem Tov. Right? See, this comes from the Shlo. The Shlo is saying that you need to have in mind, when you're eating, that you're uniting the infinite light of God with the world. You're making a yichud, like you're doing a mitzvah. And I remember that night we went to, what was it called in Baltimore, Burger Bite? Anyone remember? I think Burger Bite, right? So, I mean, the first bite or two, I kept thinking about that. After that, already, but the first two bites I had in mind, that your mamish making a yichud. Your mamish, again, you can't have it in mind the whole meal, so the first two bites, first three bites, yeah? But to have in mind the affirmation that you are now being able to be involved in connecting Hashem to the world. So, but if you want a book to know, but which nights should you not have a hamburger? I want an instruction manual. When do I know when to separate? When to be conditioned to you? When do I know Nizr Atzmin Yain is an Aveir? When do I know? Rabbi, tell me. No. You have to live with that contradiction. It's interesting. Psham Shonofol Hirsch, one of the most beautiful things, Psham Shonofol Hirsch, when he was old, he was already an older man, and he went, he spoke to the people over there in his congregation. He said to them that they have to make sure to organize for him a trip. He wants to go to Switzerland. He wants to go see the Alps. He wants to go to the Swiss Alps. So a few eyebrows were raised. You know, Rabbi, you know, I don't know if rabbis get paid vacations, if that's part of the salary, but Shams Fafalaj, definitely nobody would have thought that he's interested in, like, you know, having a hot cocoa in the skiing course. So they asked him, you know, they asked Psham Shofalosh, Vos felt there, what do you... So Psham Shofalosh said with a straight face, he says, Vos meinte, what do you think? I'm afraid, after 120, to stand in front of the Kisei HaKavod, God's throne of glory, and God is going to ask me, did you see my Alps? Did you make sure to go see my Alps? Psham Shofalosh says, I'm afraid, I'm not, what am I going to say to God? Affirmation. That's when we talk about behaviorally, that tribulation, having to deal with that struggle. What about existentially? Forget about our behavior. Let's ask a deeper question. How is one supposed to look at the world? In my mind always, when I talk about this problem, this struggle, this antithetical issue that we have to deal with, so I always say there seems to be a big machloikis, a huge argument, diametrically opposed ideologies, shitas, of the Zohar on one hand and Louis Armstrong on the other. Louis Armstrong, so most of you know, you remember. So Louis Armstrong holds, Vazak Louis Armstrong, what a wonderful world. Right? What a wonderful world. What does the Zohar say? How are you supposed to look at the world? The words that are said about Olam Hazeh in the Zohar, in Chassidus and Tanya sometimes, the words that it says over there, mamash, it gets you depressed. Olam Choshech, darkness, a dark world, like it's a Gargamel type of world. Darkness, double, quadruple darkness, such a dark world. Is that how we're supposed to look at the world? So it's a Machlekes Louis Armstrong in the Zohar. Is it a wonderful world, or is it not a wonderful world? So, but it seems to say that according to Judaism, or these sources, existentially, we have to negate the world Complete negation. Darkness, Olam Hazeh, not worth anything. Right? On the other hand, the beautiful idea I saw the Rebbe Rashab. Rebbe Rashab once said, listen to this. This is a quote from a Sikha, the Rebbe Rashab. To see the beauty in the world is not yet Avodas Hashem. That's plain humanity. Avodas Hashem is seeing the godliness in the world. To be able to see the beauty in the world, that's just being a human being. If you can't see the beauty in the world, if you don't know how to focus on the beauty in the world, that you haven't yet reached humanity. Serving Hashem is seeing that it's all God's light. So it means, you know, there's a story, one time the Rebbe Rashab was walking with his son, with the Friedrich Rebbe. They were walking along, I think in Yalta, and they were having a discussion. And it was a very involved idea in Chassidus. They were, you know, meditating, and they're very involved. And as they were walking, so the Friedrich Rebbe was a young man, I guess he was still a bacher, and his mind was so preoccupied with what his father was saying, he was distracted that as he was walking by, he absentmindedly, he's moving his hand along the leaves, and he tore a leaf from a tree. Friedrich Rebbe said this is in the Likutei Diburim. The Rebbe Rashab stood still. He started trembling. He looked at his son and he said to him, how do you tear a leaf off a tree? How will you just destroy something of this world? Why would you, for no reason? Obviously, if you have a talus, you want to do something with it to serve Hashem, but just to destroy it, to tear off a leaf from this world? So there seem to be many places in Judaism, I don't know, all the that you learn the Maseches Brachos. Chazal established that we make many blessings for what? For the things, the beautiful things that we see in this world. Tehillim, chapter 104. Baruch Nafshi Es Hashem. Right? The great German poet Goethe, Wolfgang Goethe, they say that he learned Hebrew so he could read Tehillim 104 in the original Hebrew. Mm-hmm. Just so he could read in the original Hebrew. Tehillim 104, Marabu Masech Hashem. Read the beauty of the world. How much David HaMelech spoke about the beauty of this world. Is David HaMelech seems to be saying like Louis Armstrong? What's the answer? What's the answer? Are you supposed to affirm this world or negate this world? The answer is, Balkar Chata Chai, Balkar Chata Meis. You have to live with that dualism. You want to be religious? You have to struggle with it all the time. You have to struggle with it. You have to see the beauty in the world. And yet, on the other hand, not be too connected to it. Existentially, you have to see the world. Let's say something very clear. Why does the Zohar call the world such a dark world? Is the Zohar, does Rav Shimon Bar Yochai have an issue with seeing the beauty in the world? You know why he calls it a dark world? Imagine a world as wonderful as ours, with sunsets, and childbirth, and love, and trees, and everything that this world has to offer, and you could look at it and not see that it's the light of Hashem. That's what it means that it's a dark world. That you could look at the world and not see Elokus, and not see that it's the light of Hashem, and not feel how everything is godliness. That's what the Zohar means, that it's dark. You have to affirm the world and negate the world as something other than Hashem. Today's actually the birthday and the yahrzeit of the Mittler Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe's son, Tess Kislev. So the Mittler Rebbe said, what did he want from Jews? The Mittler Rebbe, today is his yahrzeit, he said that his dream is that when two Jews meet on the street, they should discuss Yehudi law. They should discuss the unity of God. They should be able to look at the world in the middle of the street, the middle of the day, and see how the world is the light of Hashem. Living with the constant affirmation and negation. That's the first thing a person has to deal with. That's the first dualism. What about approbation and denigration? So if Soloveitchik says, the other thing a person has to deal with is the dualism of approbation and denigration. So that was vis-a-vis the world. We have to live with this struggle. How do I look at the world? How do you look at yourself? Approbation or denigration? Should one look? Am I supposed to look positively about myself? Am I supposed to feel great? Like all these books in the in Barnes and Nobles these days, that's what all the tables are filled with, to feel good about yourself? Should I feel good about myself? Are we supposed to feel good about ourselves? Approbation? Or am I supposed to denigrate myself? Am I supposed to feel lousy about myself? Am I supposed to put myself down? And I don't have time to get into it, but I'm sure you all know there are plenty of sources for both ways, right? There are cheshbon ha-nefesh, plenty of places that say that you're supposed to look at yourself as lowly and disgusting. Russia, you're wicked. And right, the truth is, who asked this question? Are you supposed to look at yourself as wicked? Are you supposed to look at yourself as righteous? It's the very first sentence in Tanya. Right? The Alter Rebbe begins Tanya with that question. Are you supposed to affirm yourself? Or are you supposed to denigrate yourself? So just very quickly, because it's getting already late, but I want to tell you a beautiful idea for the Rebbe B'Simcha Bunim Parshischa. This is the, I would say, the standard idea for this dualism, this issue that we all have to worry about all the time. Am I supposed to affirm myself, approbation, or denigrate myself? So here's the key, okay? Because this one, if a person, you know, as important as it is to know how to look at the world, it's that much more important, what? To know how to look at ourselves, right? That's even more important. So the Simcha Bunim Parshischa said like this. He said, you know why God made us with two pockets? But the Alexander Rebbe, the Yismach Yisrael, brings this like every other page. Yeah, he says, the Rebbe Bunim says, Hashem made us with two pockets. In one pocket, you have to have V'anoichi Ofer V'Efer. I am dust and ashes. I'm nothing. I'm worthless. Dust and ashes. In the other pocket, you have to have Bishvili Nivra Ha'elam. The whole world, you're all just living in my world. It's my world, you're all just living in it. That's what Chazal say, right? Bishvil Nivroilim. It's my world. It's all about me. Hashem depends on me. Everything depends on me. You have to have that ego trip. Bishvil Nivroilim. One in each pocket. And which one are you supposed to take out? Again, there's no instruction manual. That's the dualism. That's the tribulation. That's the struggle that a religious person has to deal with all the time. You've all heard the great Rabbi Alter from Slabodka, right? Nothing so finger the Alter from Slabodka. So I heard when I was in Eretz Yisrael, I don't remember from whom, somebody said over that Rav Ruderman said that he was once witness that the Alter Slabodka had a bacher in his office, and he heard he was yelling at him, Pashut screaming at him. I mean, Rav Ruderman said he felt bad for this guy. He was like destroying him. Like it was like good thing he didn't have a machine gun. He was yelling at him, giving it to him over the head. This bacher left the office. This young man left the Alter's office. And then another young man came in. And Rudman wanted to hear, like, he thought the Alter was on a roll. He thought, he had a bad day. He was like, this was the grumpy day. You know, you have the seven dwarfs and it's like 7 days of the week. So this was like grumpy day. He thought that he was going to, and all of a sudden, like he said, he heard such sweetness from the Alter's mouth. The way he was talking to him, he was almost like caressing him with his words. That you have to be the Alter Slabodka, right? So obviously you understand, he knew which bacher needed v'anoichi ofer v'efer, and which bacher needed b'shvil nivra ha'elam. I need to tell you, as hard as it is to know how to deal with other people to do that, to deal with ourselves is the same thing. That probation and denigration of self is the hardest part, right? That's the dualism. That's what a person has to live with. Let's see further. So if Soloveitchik says, how much more so if all religious people, this is not particular to Judaism. These two struggles you will find in Lahavdil all religions. But if Soloveitchik is saying that if all people of all religions have to deal with the above-mentioned dualisms, how much more so is this true of halachic man? Listen carefully now, because this is going to be the idea. Listen to what he's going to say now. Why? Because in some respects he's a homo religiosus. In other respects, a cognitive man. In other words, you hear what he's saying? What's he saying here of Soloveitchik? The contradiction, the antinomy that halachic man is dealing with, his struggle, is not just the regular struggles of all religious people from all religions, right? Again, all religious people, all religions have to deal with affirmation, negation, approbation, denigration. All have to deal with that. Halachic man has a bigger issue. You know what his issue is? Who is he? Who is he? What type of perspective does he have on the world? Not just the world itself or him himself. What type of soul does he have? Does he have the soul of religious man? Which again, somebody just said to me before, that we didn't explain yet. We're just starting. We didn't explain yet. We're just speaking very generally now, right? He didn't need to explain. He's going to explain. He's going to spend a whole chapter explaining the soul of religious man. And then he's going to spend a whole chapter explaining the soul of cognitive man. He's not going to get to halachic man's struggle till chapter 4. Okay, look inside. But taken as a whole, he is uniquely different from both of them. Halachic man is an antinomic type. Antinomic means that he has these contradictions within him. Halachic man is an antonomic type for a dual reason. And he's going to explain, because he has within him on one hand aspects of his soul that he's like religious man, and other ways he's like cognitive, like scientific man. Number one, he bears within the deep recesses of his personality the soul of homo religiosus, a religious man. He has within him that part of him that is all about connecting to the divine, just about God. That soul which, as stated above, suffers from the pangs of self-contradiction and self-negation. But on the other hand, number two, at the same time, a halachic man's personality also embraces the soul of cognitive man. And this soul contradicts, listen carefully, all of the desires and strivings of the religious soul. In other words, cognitive man, scientific man, you know what we could call it? Because, you know, sometimes when you're scientific, and this is what I tried to explain last week, but sometimes when you're a scientific man, you have like, we have like this connotation of some professor or something. Let's not call it scientific man. If Rav Soloveitchik is going to use cognitive man, let's call it a man of the world. A worldly person. Because that's more accurate. A worldly person. You know what it means to be worldly? Worldly person. You're part of the establishment. You're part of civilization. A worldly person. A man of the world. So halachic man on one hand has religious man. He has this thirst, this striving for God. On the other hand, he has that soul of cognitive man, of a man of the world, which contradicts the stirrings of religious soul. So it seems that halachic man is a split personality, right? Because again, we're talking here not just about any dualism, we're talking about a dualism of who is he? Is he a religious man? Or is he scientific man, a man of the world? So he seems to be like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So Rav Soloveitchik says, however, these opposing forces which struggle together in the religious consciousness of halachic man are not of a destructive or disjunctive nature. In other words, he has these two parts within him, but they don't destroy him. It's not that he's suffering from schizophrenia. It's not that he has these two opposite things. Look at the next sentence. Halachic man is not some illegitimate, unstable hybrid. He's not just an illegitimate mix. He's not a schizophrenic. No. He has these two opposing souls within him. And he has to deal with them. But it's not that he's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. On the contrary. Now listen to this sentence. These next couple of sentences are absolutely some of the most beautiful sentences in the book. The next couple of sentences. We have to focus on them. So listen carefully. These sentences are beautiful. On the contrary, out of the contradictions and antinomies again means self-contradictions within, when there's an inherent struggle, when there's an inherent contradiction between two things. Out of the contradictions and antinomies, there emerges a radiant, holy personality whose soul has been purified in the furnace of struggle and opposition and redeemed in the fires of the torments of spiritual disharmony to a degree unmatched by the universal homo religiosus. Let's read that again. On the contrary, this struggle that he deals with, this two separate personalities within him, right, that he has, he doesn't become a hybrid, he doesn't become like a Shatnez, he doesn't become Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. On the contrary, out of the contradictions and antinomies, there emerges a radiant, holy personality whose soul has been purified in the furnace of struggle and opposition, and redeemed in the fires of the torments of spiritual disharmony to a degree unmatched by the universal homo religiosus. Why? Why has he reached a level unmatched by the universal religious man? Now this, in my book, this next sentence is underlined. Just FYI. Listen to this, is beautiful. And we're going to spend a long time on this next sentence because it's a very meaningful sentence. I'm sure you'll see right away. The deep split of the soul, prior to its being united, may at times, because we're going to speak about the at times also, may at times raise a man to a rank of perfection, which for sheer brilliance and beauty is unequaled by any level attained by the simple, whole personality who has never been tried by the pangs of spiritual discord. What he's saying is that a person that has a split of the soul, a person that really needs to struggle, that suffers and struggles, reaches a state, a brilliance, a radiant luminosity that is not, at times, can reach a radiant brilliance that cannot be reached by a person that never had to struggle. Let's read the sentence again. The deep split of the soul prior to its being united may at times raise a man to a rank of perfection, which for sheer brilliance and beauty is unequaled by any level attained by the simple whole personality who has never been tried by the pangs of spiritual discord. What's he saying over here? So let's look. You know what he's saying over here? So I got to tell, I'll be honest with you. What I'm going to tell you now, what we're going to learn now, what I believe this sentence is saying for the next couple of minutes, so only certain people in this room are going to understand what I'm saying. Some people will, like at times. Some people will, some people won't. On one hand, I'm jealous of those that won't. Honestly. On the other hand, I'm not. The Friedrich Rebbe, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Ayatz, you all know was in a prison under the communists in Spalerka. It was a horrible prison. He was beaten, he was tortured. And he was there for a couple of weeks. And he said, years later, he said like this. He said, if somebody would give me $1 million, and this was in, you know, he lived in the 40s, right? To spend another 5 minutes in Spalerka, in a jail, I wouldn't do it. $1 million to spend 5 more minutes there. And then he said, but if somebody would give me $1 million to take away 5 of the minutes that I did spend there, I also wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Again, some people will get what I'm saying and some won't. Do you know what I mean? That sometimes when you speak to people, there's certain people that you could tell that they suffered and certain people you could tell that they never did. Right? You could tell that there's a certain type of person that when they suffer, they become different. And again, over here when I talk about suffering, I'm not talking about everybody suffers. Everybody, life is not, you know, life is not a rose garden. Nobody has it perfect. But where Soloveitchik is saying the word at times, because everyone suffers. The question is how you deal with it. The question is what you do with it, how you deal with the suffering. I'll give you an example. I always like to use this example. There's dealing with something and there's running away from something. Right? Let's take for an example, modernity. This is one of my favorite examples. Modernity. The modernity of the world. The world today. Modern times. So there are always two schools within the rabbis, within the Jewish people. There are those that deal with the world, and there are those that run away from it. One of my favorite philosophers is a gentleman called William Barrett. He's an existentialist. He brought existentialism to America. So he says the following sentence. Listen to the sentence. He said, it is evident that anyone who has passed through the depths of modern experience and strives to place religion in relation to that experience is bound to acquire the label of heretic. Say it again. It is evident that anyone who has passed through the depths of modern experience and strives to place religion in relation to that experience is bound to acquire the label of a heretic. Whether it's Rav Soloveitchik, or the Lubavitcher Rebbe, or Rav Kook, I don't need to tell you, right? The Rambam. Anyone that dealt with modernity, anyone that engaged reality, and tried to put religion in context to that, automatically will be labeled by the establishment as a heretic. It's a rule. Because engaging the modernity, engaging reality, means what? Dealing with it. Dealing with it head on. And that's going to make a lot of people uncomfortable. So there was always that way of dealing with modernity, or there are those that ran away from it. The same thing when it comes to suffering. When it comes to suffering, Rav Soloveitchik says there are those that at times reach a brilliance that's unequaled by those that didn't suffer pangs of spiritual disharmony. There are those that run away from suffering and don't deal with it. There's an absolutely beautiful idea that I saw also from Shamshon Fol Hirsch a couple of years ago. It's a very important idea, especially when a person has to deal with suffering and you have to know how to deal with it. So in Tehillim, in chapter Chof Hei, Perek Chof Hei, chapter 25 of Tehillim, some of the customs to say that by Tachnun every day. It says there, Tzorois Levavi Hirchivu. Mimutsukasai Yitzeini, yeah? Tzorois Levavi Hirchivu. How do you translate that? No? Tzorois Levavi Hirchivu. No? The pains of my heart expand. I have more pains in my heart. Tzorois Levavi. The tzoris of Levavi, tzoris Levavi, hirchivu. The tzoris, yeah? The tzoris, the pain of my heart, hirchivu have expanded. There's a lot of tzoris in my heart. That's a simple explanation, right? And Shamshon Fol Hirsch read it differently. He read it like this. Tzoris, comma, Levavi hirchivu. Suffering, Levavi hirchivu, has widened my heart. Tzoris, Levavi hirchivu. The suffering has made my heart wider. Person that's willing to deal with it head on, to deal with the issues head on, is tzoris levavi hirchivu. I thought to myself, by the way, so what's the next two words? Mimitzukasai hoitzieni. Take me out of the suffering. Take me out of the distress. So this I, Rav Shamshon didn't say, but I thought to myself that like we're saying to God, okay, God, got it. Been there, done that. Tzoris levavi hirchivu. The tzoris made my white heart. Okay, I'm done. Wide enough. Okay, we got the point, you know, point taken. You know the great psychologist Carl Jung. Most psychologists today that are dealing with psychology, the practicing psychologists, are no longer students of Freud, they're students of Jung, Carl Jung. And Carl Jung, one of the main ideas in his psychology is what?
Dreams.
Well, that already is from Freud. One of the main ideas in dealing with people and helping people that have issues in psychology is that he claimed that all neuroses are results of a refusing to deal with legitimate suffering. All neuroses, all psychological issues that people have develop as a result of refusing to deal with legitimate suffering. What does it mean, legitimate suffering? So listen to this quote from Jung. This is a quote from one of his books. Listen to the quote. This is Tzoris Levavi Yerchivu. Listen to what he says. There is no coming to consciousness without pain. People will do anything, no matter how absurd, in order to avoid facing their own soul. One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. Again, there is no coming to consciousness without pain. People will do anything, no matter how absurd, in order to avoid facing their own soul. Enlightenment does not come by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. By facing one's own soul, by dealing with the pain head on. Why is that? That's what Rav Soloveitchik is saying over here. Yes, halachic man, a person that wants to approach God in a real way, is going to have pain. And by the way, this Rav Soloveitchik is not saying this, I'm not trying to be morbid over here. Rav Soloveitchik is not trying to be morbid. He's not trying to like make us feel bad. What's he doing over here? He's comforting us. He's saying to us that this is the Seder. This is how it goes. One has to come to any consciousness. Jung is talking about consciousness of self. And Jung said, Carl Jung taught that all neuroses, people will go to absurd lengths not to face their own soul, the darkness of their own soul. Why do people have psychological problems? Whether they start having illusions or they start having, you know, dysfunction because they don't want to face their own soul. And like I said, that's the at times that Rav Soloveitchik said. We've all met people that have this simple look at them in them, and you know that they've had a hard time in life, but you could tell that they never faced it head on. You could tell that it's buried way down below, right? And that's where dysfunction comes from. And so Rav Soloveitchik is saying, so too when it comes to relationship with Hashem, when it comes to connecting to God, he's not being morbid. He's saying you're having a hard time figuring things out. You're not having a hard time juggling all your responsibilities. That you have to be a spouse and a parent and a worker and a Jew, and you have to learn this and you have to do that, and so many things. You're going nuts. Soloveitchik is saying, face that head on. Be conscious of that darkness. That's the Seder. That will bring out, how does he say, the sheer brilliance and beauty unequaled by a level attained by a simple whole personality that didn't have to suffer the pangs of discord. That's how one reaches the essence of the soul. Why is that? Let's talk for a second. Why? Let's understand why. Why is that? Let's think for that. Okay, so we said the what. Let's understand the why. The what is that to reach depth of consciousness and a deeper connection with God, one must suffer this dualism. One must suffer this disharmony, this discord. Then one could come to a consciousness through that pain of facing one's own soul. But why? Why do you need that? Why does it have to happen like that? So let me tell you, this is the pshat, I think. Well, let's read, you know what, let's read the next sentence. Rav Soloveitchik himself is going to say it, and then let's explain. Let's read that. Rav Soloveitchik is now going to say the why. Look what he says. In accordance with the suffering is the reward. Lefum tzara agra. And in accordance with the split, the union. Based on how much you deal with it, the split, that's how much the union is going to be more. Why? This spiritual fusion that characterizes halachic man is distinguished by its consummate splendor, for did not the split touch the very depths, the innermost core of his being? You understand? For did not the split touch the very depths, the innermost core of his being? Why do we have to suffer? Why do we have to wrestle? Why do we have to have pain? Because it's the only way to touch the innermost core of the soul's being. How do you tap into what you really, really are in the deepest way? The deepest, innermost core of one's being. I'll give you an example. You've all heard the concept of a war buddy. You know, war buddy. The best friends you've had, right? The best friends are war buddies, they always say, right? It doesn't have to be you actually went to Korea or Vietnam with them. A war buddy means a person that was a friend that remained a friend when one suffered. when one through suffering. Because, you know, it's very easy to be a friend. People have a lot of friends. Talk is cheap. And you could have a lot of friends when things are going well. It's very easy. You know why? Because usually when one is not suffering, you have different aspects of your personality with which you're functioning. You manifest and you function in daily life in different ways. You have a good sense of humor, or you're an accountant, or you're fun to be with, or you're a good cook, or you're a good listener, right? You're very sensitive. There are a lot of different aspects to your personality. So why do you have a lot of different friends? How does a person make friends? Because you have aspects of your personality through which people relate to you, right? So you could have friends, you could have tell people, people present themselves to you, that they're your best friend. And I don't know if any of you, I'm sure many of you had to deal with this in life. You have people that say they sing songs to you and they write poems about you, that they'll stand by you. And they'll tell you that they're connected to you and they're best friends, BFFs. Right? BFFs, best friends forever, right? Well, so I'll stand by you no matter what. And they'll swear and they'll say it with such emotion. And then when the tough times come, out the door, stab you in the back. And it's only then, the war buddies, only then will you know who are your real friends. You know why? Because when a person really suffers, you lose all aspects of personality. You're not functioning on any normal level. You're not able to really do anything. So who are you at that point? Just like a ball of mush. Nothing there. The innermost depth of the personality. The innermost core of the being. Nothing. It's just me. Not able to be this. I'm not able to wow anyone. I'm not able to impress anyone. not able to do anything. There's nothing here. I'm broken. There's nothing. And yet you're my friend? What does that mean? It means that you connect to me in the innermost depths of my being. It means that you want me, not for any reason, just because you want to connect to me. Those are the best friends, right? You know what? When it comes to our relationship with God, it's the same thing. When could you know if you really connect to Hashem? What's Rav Soloveitchik saying over here? What's he saying? According to the suffering, the reward, according to the spiritual fusion, the consummate splendor of the spiritual fusion is when you had and you dealt with that suffering and you reached the innermost core of one's being and yet you connect to Hashem. The same thing like friends. How do you know who's your good friend? The one that was there for you when you suffered. When you were broken and a pulp of nothing and they wanted still to be your friend and they wanted to connect to you. They were still your friend because they touched you. They connected with you at that ultimate essential level. The same thing when it comes to us and Hashem. When can I know if my connection to God is real? If God and I are really friends? When can I know if I came to that consummate splendor? That beauty that Rav Soloveitchik is talking about. When can I know? When? When you suffer. Because when you suffer, not because pain by itself is something good. Pain, like Jung is saying, has that ability to allow a person to come to consciousness, listen carefully, of self. Pain allows a person to come to consciousness of self. Why? Because you're not able to function with the usual external garments that your personality is usually using. Usually in life, we get used to functioning at certain levels. I act like this, I act like this, this is how I function. And you know, we're not even conscious of it. When I meet this friend, I act like this. When I meet this person, I act like this. In my office, I act like this. And we put on all these different costumes, the masks that we wear, right? When a person, God forbid, suffers, and you're reduced to the innermost core, you can't function at any level. What are you? Nothing. It's just me. I can't manifest as anything. And yet I connect to God. Now I'm connecting to God. That means you now know that that connection is real. You're a war buddy with God. You've brought God into the innermost core. If a person is able at that time to serve Hashem, you all know. What does the Gemara say? The Gemara says, by the Mincha Seluza, the Holy Munkacher Rebbe, in his will, he asked that they should write one thing on his tombstone. This Gemara. Af chamasi amdali. No, what does Chazal say? Af chamasa amdali. Which Torah that a Jew learns in the course of life is the most precious Torah in God's eyes? Torah shalamadati be'af. The Torah that I learned when I was suffering. The Torah that I was able to, even though I was suffering, even though I was having such a hard time, I was yet able to open a sefer. Af chamas amdali. And the Mincha Seluza wrote in his tomb. That's the one thing he allowed to write in his tombstone. Lama Torah mitachadoichek. He learned Torah even when he was suffering. I'll tell you an anecdote that happened to myself. I'm telling you a story from about 18 years ago, approximately. 18, 17 years ago. So, I had just, you know, I started davening three times a day, being makbid in davening three times a day. I think I'm 15 or something like that. That's when I started really, 15, 16. But there were, you know, it was still times when, you know, Murder, She Wrote was on, you know. But then, around that time, I think it was 16, that's when I started being mocked three times a day. I'll never forget, one thing happened to me. It was the most traumatic experience of my life at the time. Now it's already child's play. Today I look back at it, it was like, you know, it's like losing a game of Monopoly. It was like, at that time, it was the most traumatic thing and the most pain I ever had in life. Good old days. So, I'll never forget, it was one evening where, like, I remember I was sitting on the couch in the den in my house, and I couldn't get up to daven. I couldn't daven mar. And it was already a while, it must have been a year already, a year and a half that I was daven three times a day, but I was so sad. I couldn't get up to daven. I couldn't do it. I'll never forget, I sat there for like 2 hours, 3 hours, I couldn't. Not because I was tired, I just... And finally I said to myself, you know what? It's now or never. This is what separates the men from the boys. It's this moment right now. Is it real or is it just a fad? Is it one of these, you know, let's be religious for a year type of things? My mother was dominant for that. My mother was hoping to sell me so long. But this is you know, is my mother's dream going to come true? Today she's already okay with it. Right? Or is it real? And I said, you know what? To hell with it. I got up. I dab marv. And I remember the first words that you say, Shir amalis, hine baruchas Hashem, kol avde Hashem, ha'imdim beveis Hashem balelis. That's how marv starts. And nusach harizal, yeah? Nusach sfar. There was no sfar at that time. It was down in Munkach still. That's how it starts. That's the first sentence you say. And it hit me like a lightning bolt. This is the thought that came into my head. At that moment, like, mamash as if Hashem gave me a present. Like, He paid me back and He gave me this idea. As I was saying the words, it hit me. Shir amalis, hine baruchos Hashem kol avde Hashem. Who's an eved Hashem? When do you get the appellation? When do you earn to be called a servant of Hashem? What are the next words? Ha'imdim beveis Hashem balelois. Those that could stand up in the house of God at night. In the nights of life. During the dark nights of the soul. During those nights, those times of that suffering. A Jew at that time of that discord, of that suffering, that furnace that Rav Soloveitchik is talking about. One could still get up and daven. When your kishkas are sticking out, are spilling on the floor. You could get up and daven. Oyim demeveis Hashem baleleis. Thus is called Avdei Hashem. That reaches that consummate splendor that Rav Soloveitchik is talking about. So what he's telling us over here is we have to know, don't run away. Don't be scared of the fact that being a Jew, an Erlich Yid, necessitates pain and struggle. Be happy with it. Savor it. Know that this is my opportunity to reveal my kishkas for Hashem, to come to the depth of who I am. And make it real. Make God into my war buddy. Mitzvah Shem Mashiach comes, we're not going to need it. We're going to only have good things, Mitzvah Shem, and He'll be our buddy. L'netzach v'od Mitzvah Shem, we'll be zeichet for tonight. Any questions, comments, or witticisms? Yes. Yeah.
But don't we say that it's really easier in a certain sense to impose Hashem, so to speak, my market made Makim because he called Hashem from the depth. So it's easy to pull out with Hashem when the person's suffering. Is it a higher madrega to pull out?
So that's a good question. So the simple taichem and Makim Krasich Hashem, that kilo that. That's when a person needs God. When you're in a state like that, you need God to help you. That's the pashta taich mamakim krasi Hashem. That's the pashta taich that I'm in a depth. I'm in a dire strait. I need God. There are no atheists in foxholes. That's not a challenge. When you need God to help you with something, here we're talking about that a person is pashta suffering. It's a different thing. Understand? There's the pragmatic things that I need God. Right now I'm in a state, I'm in a circumstance that I need God to help me. I'm in a foxhole. I call everyone, even an atheist will call out to God. That's a no-brainer. That's easy when you need God. Here we're talking about that, you know, I'll make it easier for you. Let me ask you a simple theological question that's such an obvious question, but many people don't think about. There's a question like, are you supposed to think that everything happens for the best, or are you supposed to pray that things should get better? Not pray that things should get better? It's a mitzvah sase deraisa. It's a mitzvah deraisa to daven that things should get better. The answer is present and future. I'm sorry, past and future. If something happened already, then you say, whatever happened is for the best. If it happened already, that's past. If it hasn't, if it could change, then you have to daven that it should get better. If the person, chas v'shalom, died already, then you're not going to like start davening for resurrection. Right, you're going to say everything was for the best, but if you could still save him, right? So same thing what we're talking about over here. If a person is still hoping that I'm in the depths and God has to save me, help me, God, get me out of this suffering. So that's Mamakim Krasi Hashem. There are no atheists in foxholes. God, I need your help. Help me out. You know, blow on the dice. Grandma needs a new pair of shoes. If on the other hand the person is suffering, something bad happened already, and now I'm completely suffering. I'm completely incapacitated. That's when my kishkas are on the floor. That's when it's a question if I'm a Eved Hashem. Any other questions? Yeah.
Is this quick coming up in Parshas Vayeshev, the famous Rashi with Yaakov.
Because Yaakov is the Shabbat, right?
Ruxishel.
It's Mamash the Var, beautiful, right. That's
obviously,
the Var.
Yaakov wasn't looking to retire in Florida. I mean, he went through so much in his life.
Right, Mamash, that's beautiful. That's, Yaakov was at the second part of the Mitzukasai Hetzieni, right? Remember? Taras the Var V'yechivu, Yaakov on the Mitzukasai Hetzieni, I had enough. Genuk Shoin. Abraham says, Nate, Ruxishel Yosef, not enough. We want deeper. We want more. We want to get God deeper into your Kishka. Tov, see you next week, Mitzvah Shem.
Carl Jung?
J-U-N-G.
J-U-N-G.
The line is...
You have
my Tikkun Tzaddik.
You had an extra Tikkun Tzaddik.
Oh, yeah?
Your old one, and I have your
Tikkun Tzaddik. Last week, I thought it was one of the most fantastic shiurim I ever heard.
Thank you.
I don't know who said, and I used a couple other people, they also thought. So I don't know if it had to do with
that.
They
thought that what? That it was good or was too hard?
It was good. Oh. Yeah, it was good. They also said the same thing. Last week was unbelievable. So I don't know whether he was exactly.
You know what they say? You could please some people some of the time.